Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Well, here we are in the United States. We're going through a major election for the next president. And we are also in a very interesting cycle because of the various things with the COVID virus and other circumstances that have evolved. Our world has changed. The openness and communication with others via the media that we have of communication, the technologies that we have, really has made us aware of so many things. And one of the big questions on the table is, how can we help develop people for positions of leadership? Leadership is something where you really have to be trained to know how to work with it. It takes a lot of responsibility. But this is something that is coming more and more to the forefront. Many people asking questions, not unlike my guest, Salar Khan, who is a physician. He decided he was going to talk about what he felt we needed to do in order to have good evaluations for people that will be taking positions of responsibility that affect our lives in a big way. And Salar Khan, I want to welcome you to the show.
Yes, hi, Donna. Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to say something about the global leadership and what the problem the world is facing right now. And it is my fear that the world is approaching very close towards a third world war. So that's why I make this book to publish and let the people know and understand what exactly I'm trying to say in this book.
Well, I can so appreciate a lot of your comments. Now, you have been a director of research compliance in Chicago since 2009. You have been not only a physician, but a pulmonologist, chief of medicine, interim director of medical services, interim hospital director, associate professor of medicine, surgical assistant, research administration portfolio manager, a merit grant administrator. You have worked in Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, and here in the United States. You are a man that has experienced firsthand, because of where you were born, the effects of poor leadership. And in the very beginning of your book, you say, goodness and justice for all, no conflict and no war must be at the core of our global leaders. Now, this is something that for you is very, very significant, because you don't look just at a country. You look at the globe in its entirety, and you make a statement, current global leadership today has no compass. I think there'd be a lot of people that would agree with you on that. Why is it that you took to make it a global image instead of, let's say, just the United States or just the Middle East? Why did you want the global perspective?
Yeah, the reason for the global thing is that now everybody is connected with the web page, with internet, with media, with iPhone. So they are all very well connected. Within few seconds, they can talk and communicate with anywhere, in the world with any person. So ultimately, my picture is that, because if I focus on one country, two country, it's not going to resolve. My main issue from the very beginning, and I was thinking for so many years, and that's why I wrote my first book as a baseline to show my competence as a leadership. And that was the Unlocking the Natural Born Leaders' Abilities 2017 March. So that was providing the guidance how the people can become a leader. But now this time I focus on the global leadership and how we can shape the global leadership. So this area for the globe is because the entire globe, there are a lot of countries, 199 countries, and they have a different type of the culture, people, different mentality, different thinking, different approach. They are all drifting in a different direction, like a compass, as I mentioned in the book. So ultimately, there is also damage in their moral character, attitude, and behavior. So that's why I noticed that these leaders, they are creating trouble, going into the conflict, going into the other's territory. They are selling the ammunition, selling the fear of war and all those things to get money. But the question is that we are common people, layman people. I'm not a politician. So I think that why, as I noticed that in World War One and Two, more than 15 million people die and a lot of damages and disabilities. So it makes me very sad. And at the end, no one is the winner of the war. So that's why I focus in this book about the globe leadership. And I suggested so many new concepts, novel thought, new idea, and how we can implement. I'm very positive. I can make it. If I will get 2-3 people, I can start arranging their educational training program and everything, and we can start from there.
You talk about when you were growing up, how in your neighborhood during 1965 and 1971, there were the Indo-Pakistani wars. And you are very familiar, which is something nobody really wants to say. Gee whiz, I went through this war or that war. And you talk about bombs that were dropped. One fell in a mosque in your neighborhood, and it didn't detonate. And then one of your neighbors, a bomb fell on their home. And you say, and I'm quoting from your book, war and conflict cause lifelong disabilities, suffering, and economic loss. And this is complementary to what you just said, except to those who sell the weapons of war. And the next generation should not have to endure that very thing. You also bring out in your book that many of the groups that were engaged in the wars splintered, and they work against each other. So it's as if there is just one war promoted right after the other. And you're very, very emphatic about how important, if one is a leader, one must be held accountable for their actions, for their decisions. This is something that I've heard about from many people for years, but I think it is something that often we will forget when it comes to those people that are making decisions for nations and what they do, how it affects people all over the globe. It's not just in the United States, it's throughout Europe, it's throughout Australia. Accountability is extremely important, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true. That's why I wrote in this book, the leadership must be accountable for their act. And then so many times we have a lot of leaders, they are incompetent. They cannot make decision. They are not task-oriented, goal achiever. They are just talk and talk and creating trouble, creating conflicts. And then everybody is making a polarized world. All leaders are expelling in a different directions. And then they are making different 2-3 bigger groups. And then they can start fighting with each other. So ultimately, we have to stop that one. And we have a certain plan how we can accountable. Because so far, I never noticed that any leader, there is some war crime and all those things that happen after 10, 20 years, or that leader is already no more in the world. But they pass resolution or some investigational report indicating that, yes, that person is committed crime for the war or something like that. But my question is that why it is going to happen? Why not we can improve our leadership, the world leadership? The people who are going to participate in the election as the prime minister or president of any country. So ultimately, we need to screen all those candidates for the future leadership to take over the world and make our world a better place to live. So this is the most important thing. And later on, I will discuss how we are going to implement all those things.
You have a comment in your book, human history is only a fraction of the history of the universe, which should be something that we pay attention to. And when you look at human history, you find that there's often a leader that's just exemplary, that really does a good job. And it seems like anybody that comes after that leader, whether they're male or female, it seems like the systems become weaker. And you bring out a commentary in your book on making evaluations about individuals' competence. And this is something, you know, when you go to try to get a job somewhere, you have to have skills, abilities, and when you're interviewed, you have to be able to give information about what you're competent in. And oftentimes, leaders of countries, that's not required of them. They don't even have to have much of an education. They're just brought in, or maybe there's a coup, and they get in that way. This is something where the population itself needs to be educated as to what the requirements are. And what are those requirements? You have a number of statements regarding what you feel people should be evaluated for before they're even allowed to run for a position.
Yeah, so for that one, I suggested about this independent leadership organization, international, IGLO. And that IGLO is going to work to screen out the effective leadership role, and by interviewing them, evaluating their previous experience and exposures and all those things. So in that way, they can have an idea that person is competent enough, and what is the personality, attitude, behavior, cognitive function, mental status. So there is a list of all those procedures which we have to adopt before we can allow and select the candidate for the future leadership anywhere in the world from any country. So in that, under that organization, they are going to oversight the entire world, the people or the candidate who are interested in participating in future election. So they have to go through first a screen, and then in the book, I mention about the self-evaluation for the global leadership. So when they will read this book and they can understand if they have how much percentage of capabilities for doing all those things which is required to be a good global leadership. And there is a 33 questionnaires and self-evaluation. And then there is a scoring system, so they can see where they stand today. And if they feel they are good, so definitely they can go through this particular organization, and then they are going to start evaluating and making sure that they are competent enough, having a good education, they know the politics, they have a general knowledge also, and they belong to some kind of the political science education also, economic education also, because the leadership, when they having a good leader, we have. So ultimately, it's my interpretation is that they are going to appoint a good advisor. And nowadays, I notice that most of the countries, their advisors are very, very incompetent people. They are giving bad advice. They are emotional. They are making situation worse instead of working together to make something positive. And we are looking for some positive attitude and positive behavior leadership role, not the negative people. And then I was reading the history of world leaders. So many people, so many leaders, past leaders in the world, they are psychotic. They are schizophrenic. They are drug abuser. They are alcoholic. And they are all those things. And how they can hold the position in the office as a world leadership? Any country they lead, they are belonging to the world. Everybody is interconnected. It is not a small country and they are not isolated or separated. They are directly or indirectly attached with each other. And everybody must work together for the common goal, for the betterment of the general public and the people. And here, the leaders, they are coming and going, and they are not doing any good job for the poverty, for the people, for the betterment of the world. So in that way, we are moving towards more disasters in the world. So we have to stop somewhere. And that's why with the establishment of that organization, we are going to make some change slowly and gradually in stepwise. And then I can split if anyone right now at the age of 40 years or above, and they feel they are good enough for the leadership role. They are working any organization as a CEO. So ultimately, they have some experience. So they can come forward. They can send application to registration for this IGLO organization, which is going to be established according to my recommendation in the book. And then they are going to look into that candidate, and after that they can communicate with that candidate. And then they will see the education and everything is there. And after that, we have to need to evaluate their childhood, what type of the psychological trauma they have in their childhood, child abuse, any problem, any fear, and anything else. If any leader who is elected or selected for the leadership role, and if they are having underlying fear, how they can make the quick and correct decision? When we are confused and we are not making good decision, it means there is no clarity of mind. If there is no clarity of mind, how they can make the decision? How they can implement the policies? How they can implement the procedures? So these things are all interconnected with each other. So in that organization, we have to purify the leadership and candidates moving forward. They have a very good moral, good character, good attitude, positive behavior. They are more problem solvers, not the problem creators. And then, at the end, we need to evaluate by the psychiatrist and psychologist to evaluate their mental status examination to make sure they have a sound mental capacity to make a clear decision, because they are going to holding the top position and millions of people's life in their hand. We are not going to select anyone crazy person to make the wrong decisions for the world and creating trouble for the people. And after their tenure is over, they are gone. And after that, nobody asks who was that person. But at the end, as a public, we are the sufferers. And our new generation is coming up. They will suffer. So that's why I decide right now to do something for our upcoming generation, so we can give something good after 10, 20, 40, 15 years. So ultimately, in that way, we can make a good leadership coming up. And I have a very good plan, starting from younger age group, 40 years age, whatever they have, and then the people who are between 20 to 40 years age, if they are having some manager level and all those things like that, how we are going to train and educate them, making a very simple type of education and workshop and all those things so they can better understand. And in that way, my goal, what type of the leader I need? I need a talented leader. The talented leadership, when I say, it means to me that is a natural-born leader. A lot of people do not agree with natural-born. When I say natural-born, my meaning for the natural-born is one-third of the world population, the people, they have a lot of hidden potential and talents. We have to bring out that skill set to perform well. When they expose unto the stressful situation, high pressure, time-sensitive environment, taking the complex issues and dealing with that one. So in that way, their brain and body start working together under the stressful situation. When they pass through 2, 3, 4, 5 different type of these issues, then their mind start thinking out of the box. And once they have that capability developed and the mind start analyzing the detailed information and so many things, and in that way they can make a better decision and what option is good at that particular circumstances. And in that way they are getting that capability to make the good decision for the benefit of the public, people, and the world. So this is all, and there is a lot of other things I have in my mind, so I will wait for your next question, and I will further add up.
Something that you have done, which I don't know that many people do, and I can't speak for anyone else, but it is something that I have found at different times in my life I have had to do, and that is self-evaluation. And being able to look at oneself with honesty and you talk about self-reflection. Anytime there's a position of leadership, whether it is for a company or it is for a community, for a state, a nation, each level has its responsibilities. And this is something that you yourself have grown through many, many different lessons, if you will. And I found it interesting that you wanted to, your perspective of doing assessments and values for positions in leadership after the age of 40. And it didn't surprise me, but there are many, many people that would say, well, you cannot put everybody in a box. The evaluations that you would want to make, who's going to be making the evaluations? How are these people going to make judgments? Because we have had individuals that have been in scenarios where they have been making selections, and there often has been a bias towards whatever, for whatever reason. This is something that I think is a huge challenge for humanity in general, because there's so many different cultural aspects that come in. And in today's world, women are wanting to take more and more of a position of authority. And as far as I'm concerned, it doesn't make any difference if you're male or female. If you can get the job done, wonderful. But these are things that come into people's minds. And we have such diverse culture around the planet. It's really difficult sometimes to break through cultural patternings that are not consistent with really encouraging people to be leaders. This is something I've noticed in your studies and in your evaluations and dealing with different cultures as you have. What's your positioning on that? Because this is not something that you can just fix in a very short period of time. It's going to take quite a while.
Yeah, this program is going to have a short-term goal and long-term goal. The short-term goal, as I mentioned, that if you will start, and as in the book I mentioned that I am planning to start that screening of the leadership for the president and prime minister role all over the world by 2024. So we can simplify the screening process. In the beginning, definitely we start from zero. So ultimately we can go through the simple procedure so everybody have an equal chance. If they have a leadership role somewhere, they are working and they feel they are competent enough, then they can apply for that. And this independent global leadership organization, IGLO, they are going to design the screening process, the screening guideline, outline. So it should be a very simple way, because we know that there is a lot of third world country people. The people, they may not be much more educated or something like that. But something we can make it very simple for each human being level, so everybody have an equal chance. And sometimes it's not necessary that the people who have a leadership talent, they are highly educated. No, they may be illiterate. In my country, I noticed there is a lot of people, they never have any business degree or nothing else, but they are a very good businessman. So we are also giving equal opportunity to them. But once they become a president or prime minister, for example, if they have a certain college degree or high school, for example, but they are talented and they know how to make the decision. They do not have their fear of failure. They have a clear vision. And then they can work under the stressful situation and making good option, good decision, and good success rate. Why not they can be go for the election process and selection process in that country? It's not a problem. And this organization will issue a certification that, okay, you are mentally sound, you are educationally and by the leadership role, you are okay, you can do it. And then this organization will keep follow-up, and then they can provide some tool for annual continuing education, something to know they are not deteriorating after getting into the leadership role, and making sure and remind them that you are accountable for any wrongdoing. And then you are responsible for your success to select a better advisor, to give the better advice, and to avoid any war or anything else, and then you can go with better prosperity of the public and the people. So this is the way for the 40 years beyond, and they are already in the pipeline. And the other people who are 20 and 40 in between ages, and now my focus, and this organization will focus more on this group of the people, so they can provide little bit more detailed information, detailed training tool, workshop. So in that way, they can polish and train, and then they are going to able to find their hidden talent and their hidden potential, what they can do and their skill set. And after doing all those things, they feel comfortable to make their own decision. And this way, we are preparing these people after 20 years of 25, 30 years for the leadership role. And then the people who are already right now born in year 2000 and 2020 now, in 20 years age range, then we can focus on better leadership, their moral character, development, attitude, and all those things. We can work with that one. And then I will request the parents, they have to take care in the early childhood of the kids. They are age of 2, 3, 4 years. One of the family members, father or mother, they can spend some time with the kids and telling them a moral story at night for 5, 10 minutes. And then in that way to tell them how to be a disciplined, obedient, because these things are important. If the kids from the very young age, they become more appropriate and they can understand the obligations of the good moral character and behavior, they are going to be a good citizen for the future. And in that way, we are provide them a new idea, new thought, and then they can think what they are going to do it. And we can give an opportunity in the class, school, college, university, then they can think what the new idea they got and how they are going to implement. So the brainstorming is starting in that age group. So we are going to get something very good after 30, 40 years age, which I can see. These people are going to be the one of the best global leaders, and they take care for the globe very nicely, without any war, without any ammunition distribution or drone attack or anything like that, destructive things no more. And then right now, there are so many leaders. And why I wrote this book? Because some destructive personality leaders, I noticed that one. And that destructive-minded people, they are dangerous, more than dangerous than the negative thinker. They feel very happy because they are psych and after destruction and killing of the people. And they don't have any sympathy for those people. And their moral is eroded. They cannot make a good moral judgment for the humanity, for the people. They may have in their childhood something bad happen. They are ready to take the revenge from the other humanity, other people also. So we are not going to allow in future those type of the people to come and run the country, run the globe, and making the bigger decisions at the world level, at the global level. These people are destroying our new generation, our future generation. So that's the reason we have to focus the mental evaluation, personality, and value development. And then here I will tell you why I got all these leadership abilities and everything, how it came up and is built up in my mind. Because when I was the age of 12 years, I was close to with my mother and father. And my father gradually tell me the different tasks and all those things. And then I learned the organizational skill at home. It's very simple. And then I worked with my mother in the kitchen and so many things. I noticed that how she is having a time management. And now these two, and I was obedient, and my mother was always saying that respect the elder people. And then you have to focus on whatever you want to do it. And you have ability, you can do it. And nothing is impossible. You can make it possible. And if I do something wrong, she reassured me. And these reassurance built my positive energy, built my more motivation. And I feel free. And I focus more and more on my work. And once I develop the hyper-focus state, I go into the state of flow. And then after that, accomplishing the work and task and project, I feel happy in my heart. And that's the point. That's make me happy. And then I will tell you one thing, which is very important. At the age of 10 years, I was thinking that I'm going to write a book one day. And I'm also going to write some poetry. And it was just came to my mind. And then after a few days, I feel that how I got more energy. And then I started studying more and more and making my efforts to be a better student, better knowledge to gain and all those things. working hard in home and learning all those things from my mother and father, and the basic leadership qualities I got everything from my mother and father up to the age of 15-20 years. And after that, I become a doctor. Even though I was not willing to become a doctor, I was thinking for the engineering. But my father told me, I said, I will do it, because I was having a confidence. I have not a 0.1% feeling that it may be fail. No, I was sure that I will get it. And now what happened now? 3 years before, I was thinking time to time to write a book. But I was thinking that, okay, at the time of retirement, I will go for and write the book. But bad incidents happen. And my cousin, my elder sister, younger son, 36 year, he was working with the computer and sitting on the carpet, and he just fell down and he was dead. And after that, I think that, oh my goodness, I'm waiting for retirement. I don't know. Either I will be alive next day or not. And that's why December 2017, I started writing that book on the leadership, my first book. And then I wrote my second book, Am I Burnout at Work? And this is my third book. And now I'm working on my fourth book also. So this is all about the detail. And if you may have some more questions. So this thinking about the writing a book, it was in my subconscious level. And then after a few years, I feel that I'm moving towards better knowledge, better everything. And then I can definitely write a book. And it was in my mind, I have already written my book. So the things came up to my pre-conscious level. And then it goes into the conscious level in 2017. And I wrote the book within 2 months. Everything was very crystal clear in front of my eyes. And everything is coming just like a film. And I just start writing the book.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the thing which I want to say, our young generation and everything, if they want and they make some kind of determination, they want to do something in future, they put into the sub-mind. Subconscious mind, and then they can work on it, and the time will come, their body language will say that, oh, you have already achieved that one.
Mm-hmm.
So at the mind level, if it is done, and then when you start doing that thing, and then you will achieve it right away.
Dr. Khan, it's been a delight having you as a guest. You're very passionate, you are very dedicated, and your thoughts are interesting. And you have a website, and it's Dr. Salara Khan. People can find out about your other publications, and doctor is spelled out. Salar is S-A-L-A-R, Khan, K-H-A-N. And before we say goodbye, I'd like to read the lyric you wrote to inspire global leaders. We decide to lead a nation and its people, but leadership exists in different flavors. Negativity dominates from people with silver plates, destroying humanity without care of the stakes. Let us change, let us grow for the betterment of our nation instead of fighting foes. Challenges, let us stand, strengthen our heart. Let's build a better world before we depart. Let's leave a mark that will forever live, reach success with excellence, overcome fear with confidence. Our goal, to achieve our heart's desires, for us to be content with love and happiness. Nothing's impossible if we join our hands for the betterment of our land. Dr. Khan, I want to thank you again for being my guest. It has been a pleasure, and I wish you nothing but the best.
All right, so thank you so much for this interview, and my fourth book is, I'm working on it, The Art of Cooking, Dr. Salar's South Asian Recipe, and that is another my hidden talent which I bring out to the surface, and I'm able to write my own book and giving some guidelines to our chef, new people, they go into that industry, to provide them good guideline how they can become a good chef.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Khan. I really appreciate that. It is just wonderful. You are just so energetic. I mean, if we could bottle it and pass it out, you'd make a million. Dr. Khan, thank you so much again for being my guest.
God bless. And I say thank you so much for my parents, my mother and father, because they built all those things in me, and my energy and my inspiration is still alive. And that's why I'm telling my new generation and their parents, they have to take care for their new generation. From the very beginning, age of 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 years, they built up a better quality kids for the future generation, for the future leadership. Thank you so much,
Dr. Khan. But this is Donna Sebo, and I want to repeat his website, Dr. Salar. Khan.com. A man that really has come a long way. When you think that in his own childhood he survived the war environment, and today he chooses to inspire. Now, if you are an author and you would like to be able to have an opportunity perhaps to be on the show, you can send me a copy of your book. I do not do PDFs. Send a copy of your book along with contact information, please, to the following address. It is Post Office Box 99015, Lakewood, Washington 98496. That's P.O. Box 99015, Lakewood, Washington 98496. And do allow 6 to 8 weeks for review of the material. And believe me, I get a lot of publications, so you need to allow for that much time, and you can always follow up with me. And again, I do not do PDFs, and it is important that you have that contact information with your book. If it's not there, then it is going to be very difficult for me to reach you. So that is important, and sadly, I've been getting a number of publications where people have not taken that time. You know, I have done so many interviews with people from different parts of the world in my 19, going on 20 years of doing my programming. I've interviewed people that have been on death marches. I have been able to interview people that have gone through tragedies that are just absolutely horrific. But the one message, not unlike Dr. Khan, that they all have is, we have to be accountable. We have to be held responsible for what we do. And this is a patterning that I think is little by little, people are wanting that accountability to take place, to count. And it's something that it seems like every generation has to go through. I'm fascinated with history. And I thoroughly enjoy programs like the History Channel and so many other things that are put out. And of course, I receive just lots and lots of published materials regarding history. And I find it so interesting how sometimes that which is considered to be very negative often brings up people that otherwise maybe would not even want to step into a positioning of leadership, yet they do that. They step in because they say, I think I've got what it takes to do the job. But leadership encompasses so many different things, so many different aspects. And working with people of diverse attitudes and opinions really does take a clarity and a discipline that no matter whether you're doing this with your own family or you are doing it as a head of a corporation, you're an entrepreneur, you're a leader in your own way, or you're running, as I mentioned earlier, a state or a nation, there is tremendous responsibility that comes with that. And it's a responsibility that often is not really recognized to the degree it should be until after one is in the positioning. And then all of a sudden, it's like the eyes are wide open. So preparation, education, aligning yourself with people that are of good character and have a very strong positioning of understanding of whatever system you're going to be in, what it is, how it works, what you can do to better it. Maybe be aware of some options that perhaps that person that you are with just has no idea about. And that is why I think for young people, apprenticeships are so important. Whether you're wanting to know how to be a construction worker or you want to be anything and everything else, run your own business or maybe run for a political office, it's often very easy to talk, but leadership does demand attention. It does demand that you be educated, that you understand certain things, and education comes in many different forms. So there are those people that can be well-suited for it, but many times others, they get into positionings and it's over their heads. That's the old term that is so often used. This person is drowning. It's way over their heads. And it's a tough proposition. But you know what? Sometimes being thrown into the pool enables you to realize that maybe there are some people that are a little smarter than you. And what that brings up, and it's about myself, and it's a memory. It had to do with a Marine sergeant. I think I was a whopping 4 or 5 years old. And my mother was insisting that I learn how to swim. Well, when you're little like that, sometimes it can be very intimidating when you go into a pool. And it was for me sort of at the beginning because I just didn't have a clue as to what it took to be able to swim. Well, there was a Marine sergeant that took on we little ones. And I guess I was a little gabby as a little girl. Surprised? I don't think so. Anyway, I can remember being in that swimming class. And, oh, I was just having the best time. And he had told me more than once, Donna, you've got to stop talking. I'd look at him with my big brown eyes and I'd go, mm-hmm. And then somebody would be doing something. He'd have exercises and I'd get all excited. So he said to me, he said, Donna, what happens when you don't listen? Well, his technique was he'd throw you up in the air and you'd end up doing a belly flop. Well, I'd learned enough about swimming to feel fairly confident in the water. So I knew what he was going to do. Well, I wasn't listening. I kept on talking. That sergeant picked me up. He said, okay, Donna, I told you. And he tossed me up in the air. And I did the biggest belly flop my little body could possibly do. And I will never forget him saying to me, do I have your attention? Well, I was sort of in a stun mode because belly flops hurt, okay? So I looked at him and he said, come on, I'll take you underwater. And I absolutely loved that. I remember hanging on to his broad shoulders, and he took me down into the deep part of the pool. I had to hold my breath. And, of course, he was an adult. He went across the pool in like 2 or 3 strokes. And I was so thrilled. And he looked at me, and he said, okay, no more talking. I was pretty good after that. But sometimes we look at things like that, and we might even hear a story like that. We go, oh, that's terrible. He should never have been allowed to do that. This was a man that had worked with children for a long time. He was not angry with me. He wanted me to pay attention because my safety and my well-being in the water depended on that. Well, he got the point across. And, of course, he wasn't far away from me. When I hit that belly flop, he was right there. But he got my attention. So I would just share that with you because sometimes we go through experiences that seem pretty harsh. But we have to learn, again, an old saying, the hard way. I can't imagine any of you ever having gone through something like that. But life's lessons often come with a touch of discomfort. Or like me, a serious belly flop. Donna Sebo here. And by the way, if you want to be made aware of the guests that are coming up on the program for the month of November, I encourage you to go to my website, DelphiInternational.com, also MrsSebo'sClassics.com, where my publications are. And you will find that there's calendar listings, and also you will find the Donna Sebo Network, which if you're listening to this right now, you know how to get to that. All you have to do is Google Donna Sebo and bingo, the link pops up there. But what happens is that you're kept informed, and if you get the newsletter, and you can sign up for the newsletter, that's really quite easy to do. There's a pop-up menu for that. You sign up there, then on the first of every month, just like past November 1, the newsletter is in your mailbox. So you have the guest listings. We share positive information in that. There's a recipe that's in there. It's just something that I've been doing for years. It's my way of keeping in touch with people. Now, also, if you like us on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter, then my assistant, Deb, she will keep you informed as well because she puts out daily notifications. And this is something that I want people to know, and I hope you will share with others that this is positive programming. Now, by the way, in the second half of the show, and you're going to be able to call me this evening if you so desire at 253-582-5597. That's 253-582-5597. And the Donna Sebo Show is from 8 to 9 p.m. Pacific Time. And then Warriors for Peace, which makes a double header on Wednesdays, is from 7 to 8 p.m. So who's coming up tomorrow evening where we're going to be talking about how you can shine brighter every day with Danum Moore? And we are going to be discussing some real positive things. She's an amazing woman. And then we've got your Dr. John Leaf this Wednesday, The Secret Language of Cells. This publication is absolutely phenomenal. It will give you an insight on how the body, how your body works in a layperson's language. Then we're going to be traveling to Honduras talking about Journey to Justice and what people have gone through in that nation and that country. And I really think that we've got some fabulous, fabulous guests this month. And by the way, I've got a friend, Leo Pearlstein. Leo has been sharing programming with me for, oh my goodness, a number of years, and he is going to be on my show. He's going to be live this coming Thursday. He's 100 years old, and when you listen to this man talk, you would never know that. This is a man that has a passion for life. He is someone that really gives a wonderful picture of what you can do when you turn 100 years of age. And the sensory processing diet. This is written by a mom, and I think you're going to find her information fascinating because of what she's been able to discover that really helped not just her own child, but many other children. Donna Sebo here, 253-582-5597. Oh, by the way, I almost forgot to tell you. I am going to be doing a Zoom presentation with the Psychic Spectrum, and that is going to be this coming Friday evening. That's on the 6th of November, 7 p.m. Pacific Time. It's a fee of $10 for the program format, and I also will be doing mind demonstrations. So if you would like to be there and part of that, then I encourage you to check out psychicspectrum.com, and you will have all the details there. They'll tell you how to link up and all that kind of good stuff. So anyway, I wanted to be sure that I got that information out. You know, there are so many people having so many fears. And I'll be so glad when here in the state of Washington, we finally open up the libraries and the museums, because it is really very important. It makes all the difference in the world. We have started to allow certain theaters to open up so many people at a time. And I think it's really going to make a difference with a lot of people's attitudes. We're in the holiday season, and now it's just one of those things that just adds value to everyday life. But I wanted to share some facts. Some of you may be investors in stock, and you get very apprehensive about various things. But you know what? Since the Second World War, where there was a bear market, stocks recovered to previous levels. Not all that quickly, but it was over a period of years, and it works okay. And reinvesting your dividends, it just says, all right, the 10 biggest declines between 1950 and 2019 would have led to regaining portfolio losses within 2.5 years. Maybe I've mentioned this before, but I think it's important. Sometimes we get so caught up in what's happening in a moment that we lose sight of long term, and we get scared. People will panic and say, oh, I can't do this. You don't need to worry about your home's value. disappearing into the ethers? You know, in the 80s, the Canadian environment was just utterly tragic. It was awful. Things have turned around. All right, that's what happens. So sometimes you just have to live long enough to know that these cycles occur. And things, yes, you can be hit with a situation that you have no control over. Mother Nature has a way of showing us that. But you need to know how you think, how you respond to circumstances makes all the difference in the world. So just know you are in charge of something that's very, very significant. What is that? That is your attitudes. Your attitudes and how to work with yourself so that you move forward, not backwards. I know it's a tough proposition, but I'm here to tell you that is something we all can do. And you know what? You'll survive. You'll survive and then some. And you'll be able to look back perhaps and say, if I were to have this to do over again, I think I would have done this, that, or the other. So you learn from your experience. But more than anything else, don't forget to keep up your communication with people. Don't be afraid to talk to people. Don't be afraid to acknowledge that you're apprehensive or whatever it is that you might be anxious about. Don't be afraid of that. Acknowledge it. Look it straight in the eye. And then just say, okay, this is what I can do to make my life better. Libraries aren't open, but Goodwill stores are. Go in and get yourself some books. Do some activities that allow you to interact with people. Support your food banks. Be out there. Don't be afraid. No, it's time to turn things around. Well, I had heard something about skulls. Of course, skulls, what have they always been? They were a symbol with the pirates. There's all kinds of myths and stories that go on around them. But among many people, and many different peoples, depending on where you were in the world, they felt that the skull housed the soul. And you know, you go back into some of the cultures, and there's not too many of these that exist today. There's still some. Talk about headhunters. They would preserve the skulls of their enemies because they were trophies. Scandinavian warriors would drink from skulls. Watch the Indiana Jones. Yeah, oh, isn't that? Oh, geez. Oh, yuck. Anyway. But they believed that it was going to give them something extra. They were absorbing something from that foe that they had defeated. Well, the ancient Celts, they decorated their shrines with skulls. And I love this one. The widows in the Trobriand Islands of Papua New Guinea, their dead husbands, their skulls they put on poles as a way of stay out. And they sometimes would even use them as pots. I know you might be laughing at that one, but I'm serious. This was part of the history. They figured there was a particular case. Let me back up for a minute here. There was a particular case in 1612 in England. There was a woman by the name of Anne Shattock. She was the head of a Lancashire family of witches. Ah, yes, the English have a marvelous history. She was accused of digging up three skulls from a churchyard using some kind of a rite. They hanged her. Now, it could have been that didn't even happen because, gee whiz, the record of people being burned and killed and labeled as witches in Europe was just atrocious. But it's fascinating how in Wardley Hall in Lancashire, again England, there's a skull of a 16th century Catholic martyr. His name was Father Ambrose Barlow. They've got his head, his skull, at the head of a staircase. And they say, you better not disturb the skull, because there's an old legend that says if it is disturbed, you'll get blood-curdling screams. Mm-hmm. Well, somebody named Anne Griffiths in the 17th century. She lived at Burton Agnes Hall in Yorkshire. Here we go. I told you, the English just have some of the most delicious stories. You don't think it is? Well, let me finish it. She was attacked and she was beaten very badly by some robbers. As she was dying, she expressed the wish that her head her head, this was her wish, be buried in the home that she loved very, very much. She was, however, buried in the village churchyard. Her wishes were not honored. Well, after her funeral, there were these horrible groans and the sound of mysterious crashes. Doors were slamming in the house she had lived in. After all of this unique activity, they dug up the coffin, removed the girl's skull, and it was put in a wall off of the staircase. There's never been any commotion in the house ever since, and to the best of my knowledge, it's still standing. Screaming skulls. Ah, yes. There's even more stories. I think of the people I have known through the years that come from England. Almost every single one of them has a ghost story or something that they can relate relative to the place that they lived in or someone in the family. Stories are fascinating. Here in the Pacific Northwest, we're loaded with them too. I've got neighbors that tell me about ghosts that they've seen and the legends in our local area. There was once a restaurant where in our local neighborhood, the waiters and waitresses in the restaurant, this was in Steilacoom, would not go up into the attic because there was all kinds of strange going-ons that were happening there. I know we're past Halloween, but I just couldn't resist. Donna Sebo here, 253-582-5597. Well, here we are in November, and we're going to be talking turkey this week. But I thought I'm going to shift to something else because this is the year, and you've heard me say this in a number of shows, where this is the 100th anniversary regarding women's rights. And I found out about a woman by the name of Jacqueline Cochran. Excuse me, I mispronounced her name. Do you know that this woman set more speed, distance, and altitude records than any other pilot? Now, she was born, they think, in 1906, but they're not absolutely sure because she was an orphan. She was orphaned at the age of 4. She had no formal schooling. She took a job in a mill to help support her foster family when she was 8 years old. And with the money she saved from her wages, she got her very first pair of shoes. At 14, she became a wife and mother. After her 5-year-old son died, she divorced her husband. She worked her way up from being a shampoo girl in a beauty shop in Montgomery, Alabama, to become a celebrated stylist at Saks Fifth Avenue in Manhattan. And she changed her name at that time to Jacqueline Cochran in the process of her development. Now, she was an aviator. She was the first woman to take off from and land on an aircraft carrier, the first woman to fly a bomber across the Atlantic, the first woman to fly a jet across the Atlantic, the first woman to fly Mach 1, and the first woman to fly Mach 2. She was the first pilot, male or female, to make an instrument landing, and the first pilot to fly above 20,000 feet with an oxygen mask. She was a 14-time winner of the Harmon Trophy for Outstanding Achievements in Aviation and the Associated Press Woman of the Year in Business, 1953 and 1954. She said, I might have been born in a hovel, but I'm determined to travel with the wind and the stars. Jacqueline Cochran, fabulous woman. Donna Sebo here. I am so delighted that you've been able to spend this time with me. Remember always that you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Never weary of learning. Never get tired of asking questions, of reaching for your dream, because it makes a difference. You make a difference. All of us have the opportunity to strive for the best that we possibly can give in life. And you know what? We can keep polishing and keep that shine of our very best right out there, just like my guest, for everyone to see. Don't ever give up on your dreams. Donna Sebo here. I'll be with you again tomorrow. Bye for now. We'll be right back.
been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.